Hey, it's Morgan Absher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Just basically all facts. Like, just no opinion, no injected opinion. Mm-mm. It's trash of you to do that to this kid, by the way, as well. A student journalist who worked his ass off for the better part of 6 or 7 months for you to call that clickbait when he literally has the proof that it happened. It's insanity for you to go that direction.
I think that the reaction from UTSA and their fans and the media there has been a bit silly because, again, nobody is saying they shouldn't have taken it. Nobody is saying that there needs to be some huge investigation into what happened.
And nothing's going to change, right?
But like, we're not vacating wins here. Of, well, can you prove that they used it? It's like, that's not the story, y'all. It's that it happened, all right?
And well, I can prove that it happened.
First, y'all said, well, it lacks context. And then Sam was like, well, I'm about to dunk on you with these tags.
Last week, when he originally reported it, you saw multiple people in that UTSA orbit, media members and otherwise.
Context.
So, they said it lacked information as well because there was no actual correspondence that he could prove.
Yeah, and he said,
you get there a week later, here's the correspondence. Yeah. What do you have to say now? Now they move the goalpost to, well, did they actually use it? That's not what matters.
Can you actually prove that they used this?
That's not what matters. What matters is that it happened, and it's uncommon, and it's something that we need to not have in college football or college athletics in general.
Can we stop talking about the Taj Rael list? Is basically what they were. Right. It's basically what they rolled out and said. There is no list.
Yes,
it doesn't exist. Let's stop talking about it.
But Obama. Hour number two is on the way. We'll lead it off with David Cobb from CBS Sports right here on the Game. Back into the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. We're scheduled to have David Cobb, although we're having trouble reaching him at this moment, so we're going to get to trip around the NFL in just a moment. But I do need to tell you, this is your last chance to get over to Robert Irwin Jewelers for the Summer of 1000 engagement sale. Save up to 40% off all diamond jewelry and engagement rings. With any purchase of $9.99 or more, you get a free pair of diamond stud earrings. With any purchase of $24.99 or more, you get a free Yeti Tundra cooler, and there's so many different ideas, and they're all protected by the meant-to-be guarantee. If you buy your loose diamond or custom-made engagement ring at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you have 365 days to return it, no questions asked. If you guys break up, I hope that doesn't happen. If she doesn't like it, if it's not the right size, whatever it is, you can bring it back to Robert Irwin Jewelers for a full refund within a calendar year. Also, they have free ring sizing for life. They make sure that they take care of that ring. They have buffing, polishing, all that stuff for free. They can clean it for you. So make sure when you're trying to do business and get a diamond engagement ring and making that big decision, go to Robert Irwin Jewelers. You can propose now and pay later with financing options. You can take up to 60 months to pay. This is your last chance to save up to 40% off diamond jewelry during the Robert Irwin Jewelers Summer of 1000 engagement sale. Again, any purchase of $9.99 or more, you get a free pair of diamond stud earrings. And any purchase of $24.99 or more, you get a free Yeti Tundra cooler. But the sale ends soon, so hurry in. See a store for complete details. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers, 5 locations, are online at rijewelers.com. All right, let's go ahead and take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. All right, so Caleb Williams is making news in a really bad way at Bears camp. Seems like he's not really latching on to the Ben Johnson sort of offense. It's a little more complicated than he's used to, and he's coming off a year where he really struggled. Maybe the confidence is down. But when they got into the red zone period today, he threw 2 straight interceptions, one of which was a pick six. Like I said, red zone. So he threw nearly a 95-yard pick six. Now, if the Bears ever want to be back into a playoff contending or championship contending window, which seems like a long way off, Caleb Williams is going to have to be what we thought. We thought he was this generational prospect. And I see it, right? Like, I see the idea. Decent size, really athletic. He can throw the ball all over the place. Really good arm talent. He's accurate. He can uncork the deep ball. He's got everything you need from a physical standpoint to be a great quarterback in the National Football League. And he's still, you know, I know he didn't have a good year last year. He's still one of the best at creating off platform. But the one thing I've always had a problem with And the one thing I always knew he was going to have to work on, and this dates back to USC, he had to work on being an on-schedule quarterback. Throwing from the pocket, being good off play action. Those are the things that make you stick in the National Football League and make you one of the best. I think every single quarterback, while this sort of name or designation is viewed as a negative thing, every single quarterback has game manager in their blood. A great quarterback has game manager in their blood. We're having the debates about Jalen Hurts and Cam Newton right now and who was better. I don't really care, and we call Jalen Hurts a game manager. That's clearly not a bad thing if you're winning Super Bowls, right? Tom Brady was called a system quarterback and a game manager. You have to have some of that. You have to be a field general to be the best quarterback. I don't know if Caleb Williams has that. And I do think Ben Johnson's offense, while it's very inventive and it's very good, and you saw Jared Goff thrive in it, I do think it can be complicated. He tries to reinvent the wheel a little bit too much. I think there'll be a learning curve, but he's going to have to get over that learning curve quick. They need to capitalize right now, and he's got to show strides this season. I don't want to do the bust thing because that's ridiculous to even get into that conversation with a guy who threw 19 touchdowns to 5 interceptions last year as a rookie. But I get the sense that the Caleb Williams that we were promised is not the Caleb Williams that's going to be delivered in his entire NFL career. Oh, gosh, this was an insane situation that happened yesterday. The Raiders are releasing defensive tackle Christian Wilkins with the designation of terminated vested veteran. His time with Las Vegas is officially over. Now, the reason they ended up releasing him is due to how Wilkins treated rehab from his foot injury he suffered last season. I believe he had a Jones fracture or a Liz Frank, something like that. It's Jones fracture. But the Raiders voided the remaining $35.2 million of guaranteed money left on Wilkins' contract last month. And today, Wilkins filed a grievance with the NFLPA. So he's going to see if he can get that guaranteed money back. But Christian Wilkins, if you remember, Pro Bowl, near all pro D tackle with the Miami Dolphins. They didn't want to re-sign him, so the Raiders signed him to a 4-year, $110 million deal on March 10th, 2024, nearly a year and a half ago. Suffered that Jones fracture. They don't like how he's rehabbing, so they release it altogether and get off of his money. This is going to be some back and forth with the Raiders and the NFL Players Association to see what the guaranteed money is going to look like. But a guy that they thought was going to make a huge difference, be the Pro Bowl, all-pro caliber D-tackle he was with the Dolphins, he's no longer on the team. So the Raiders are going to have to figure out what they're going to do at the D-tackle position, and they have no good answers. Oh, the Minnesota Vikings. We have Justin Jefferson already hurt. Now, he's a guy who stays on the field pretty consistently, so I'm not going to lose my mind over this, but it's a mild hamstring strain. He's going to be held out of practice, reevaluated next week. I don't like, and this this may go to like the fantasy football player in me and being burned over the years, I don't like skill position players, wide receivers, and running backs going down with soft tissue injuries early in the season. It always scares the hell out of me. Because ultimately with a hamstring, you can re-injure it and re-aggravate it very quickly, just as fast as you got it. And, I mean, Justin Jefferson finds a way to stay on the field. He finds a way to produce. So if he's on the field, I feel good about what he can give you and what he can give the Vikings with J.J. McCarthy. But soft tissue injuries in July – just never, never make me feel good about that guy's season. Cleveland Browns, they have to deal with a retirement of a really good linebacker that they have had for 10 years, really. I mean, well, not 10 years. He was with the Cardinals before that, but they've had him for a while. Jordan Hicks is gone. He's been put on the reserve retired list and ends a 10-year career, having played 134 games, 131 starts, 952 tackles, 51 tackles for loss, 16 and a half sacks, 11 fumble recoveries, 6 forced fumbles, and 53 passes defended. The Browns just, they're not getting a lot of good news. They just have not gotten a lot of good news the past few years. A defense that was number one in the league 2 years ago has completely devolved. Myles Garrett's still there, but Jordan Hicks was a big part of that, and missing him, it's going to mean something. Oh, Justin Fields is back at practice. Connor, how do we feel about him with a dislocated toe and the pain management, given that he's a guy who uses his legs in a really big way, and that's sort of like the big allure and draw to him? How confident are you that Justin Fields is going to have at least a passable season now that this has transpired, the dislocated toe?
It's certainly gone down a little bit.
I don't feel that confident in what he's going to give us this year after that toe injury. He's a guy who can escape the pocket. He's a guy that runs a bunch of read options sort of concepts, RPOs. He likes to use his legs. And last time I checked, your big toe being dislocated is a problem when you use your legs like that. So we'll see. He was back on the field today. He was jogging around. He was doing what he needed to do. But I certainly think that this could weigh on his season this year. James Cook participated in practice today, and he's obviously not holding out or holding in. He's participating, but he wants a new contract. And here's the quote he gave today to Elena Getzenberg, who's the Bills reporter for ESPN. "I deserve what I want, I need, and it's going to eventually happen." Now, James Cook led all running backs last year in touchdowns. He was fantastic at putting the ball in the end zone. He was a really good pass catcher. I think he's within that sort of top 7 to 10 range when it comes to running backs in the NFL. But as much as he wants this to happen, he says it'll eventually happen. I wonder what that number is going to look like, Connor, because we've been sort of wrecking our brain over that constantly. We know running backs are not valued how they once were unless you're Saquon Barkley or Christian McCaffrey or Derrick Henry. So like that second tier of running back, what is that per year value that you're getting? I think he wants $15 million per year. That's what Dalvin Cook, his brother, said at least. He said that's what he deserves. But I don't think $15 million per year for a guy like James Cook is something that will serve the Bills very well. And I don't think the Bills ultimately want to pay that. So what is the number that you look at for James Cook that ensures that'll be a part of that team going forward? I have no idea. And we also know that NFL franchises are hesitant to pay running backs because of the wear and tear that you get year over year over year. I think I agree with him. It'll eventually happen. But I don't necessarily believe that he's going to get the amount of money that he expects to get.
No. What number do you think would actually be fair for him?
10, 11 million. Somewhat like Tony Pollard. What was Tony Pollard's deal with the Tennessee Titans? That's probably a fair estimation of what I think that James Cook ought to get.
Tony Pollard was 3 years, $21 million.
Okay, maybe a little bit over that. I like $10 million per year I could see, but I think it would be a short-term contract. Running backs just have a really hard time negotiating contracts in the National Football League, unless you're running for 2,000 yards like Saquon Barkley, or you have a historical track record of like 5 all-pro teams like Derrick Henry, or you're Christian McCaffrey and you can lead the league in all-purpose yards any given year. I don't know if you have that much ground to stand on. I think James Cook's a good running back. I think he's had an up-and-down career. I don't fully buy this. Now, we need to add one more. Go ahead and can you get Bengals pulled up for me? We have some news. Cincinnati Bengals. Shamar Stewart and the Cincinnati Bengals have reached an agreement. First-round pick number 17 overall, a 4-year fully guaranteed $18.97 million. That includes $10.4 million in a signing bonus. So he ends up getting exactly what he wanted. He gets what every Bengals first-round pick has gotten since we've been playing football. I know that as this contract negotiation wore on, people were starting to blame Shamar Stewart. Because really what the Bengals president Mike Brown said a couple of days ago, or it was earlier this week, he said that, you know, if Shamar Stewart gets into trouble and goes to jail, I don't think I should be paying him while he's in a jail cell. Well, it's like, why do you assume that he's going to be in jail? Why are you so hung on that? That feels like a bad place to be sort of saying. If you drafted a guy fully expecting him to get in trouble with the law, why would you draft the guy? I don't know. Also feels a bit racial. I don't know how to feel about that. That's a little strange, but ultimately cooler heads prevail. He gets a fully guaranteed deal, as should have been done, I don't know, what, a month ago, 2 months ago, Connor?
It is another instance of a team waiting and pissing off a player for no reason.
Yeah, and
for no reason.
This is different waiting, though, because like usually the waiting we talk about is, you know, a player that's top 5 at their position and the price gets driven up, so now you have to pay more. Like with Micah Parsons, TJ Watt, and Myles Garrett get paid, now he has to make more than them. That's usually what we talk about with waiting. This was just strange. This was strange. The fact that the Bengals did not want to get this signed because of some clause that involved guaranteed money being voided if he got in trouble with the law. Why are we, like, don't we want our players to, like, keep their nose clean? Like, why would you draft him if you thought that was a possibility? And if you thought that was a possibility, like, I don't understand. I don't understand it at all from the Bengals' perspective. But it gets done. It gets done. Shamar Stewart will be playing. Now next is Trey Hendrickson. Let me ask you this. Just give me a yes or no. You may have an explanation. Does that get done with the Bengals?
Probably not.
Do you think he'll play a snap for the Bengals this year?
I don't know. I don't think it'll get done anytime soon.
Well, we're right around the corner from the season. Preseason gets going next week on Thursday. So, like, if it's not getting done in the near future, it's not getting done at all, and he's just going to become a free agent. He's going to move on into another organization, get a massive contract probably.
I just don't understand why they're not paying him.
They're cheap.
Just pay the man.
And I think the other part of it that really bothers me with the Bengals, I don't think the Bengals have ever in their history, maybe a Boomer Esiason year, I don't think they've ever been in a more win-now window. And when you're in a win-now window, whether you're in the NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, you pay the best talent to play for you. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. At least I went for it. At least I realized we had a chance to go win big and tried to do everything in my power to win big. That's the one thing that always I come back to with Trey Hendrickson is you could not be in a more preferential position considering the history of your franchise. This is the best opportunity you've ever had to go win a Super Bowl. For God's sakes, a couple years ago you were in the Super Bowl. Why would you not pay the best players on your team the money they need so you can see if you can do it again, get to a Super Bowl, and win one? Bizarre. Bizarre. But that will do it for a trip around the NFL. We'll see if David Cobb's around. If not, you're going to hear more of the Gabe Kuhn Show coming up next. David Cobb is on the line right now, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports, role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN, Jeffrey Wright and Company on Thursday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday with the Gabe Kuhn Show. But it's moving day for David. David, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. My bad, guys. I put the phone down. No, was not paying
attention.
I think
I have made this exact mistake before in my lifetime when I moved into my new house.
You know, I feel really bad, but then I'm like, man, you know what? We've been doing every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for like well over a year, and I think this is the first time I've just straight up forgotten that it was 5 o'clock. So, yeah, my bad.
Yeah, no, it's all good. Have you gotten a look at the investigation that Sam Shoemaker did into the UTSA Taj Rael situation? Taj Rielson's playbook, play calls, advanced scouting to Owen McCown, the starting quarterback for UTSA. I'm sure you've dug into this. What do you make of it?
Yeah, it was. It's interesting. Basically, my understanding of it, you correct me if I'm wrong, this is a former Memphis defensive back who had recently been dismissed from the program.
Yep.
That is alleged to have shared the playbook. I mean, in those circumstances, it makes a difference, right? And I think it's why you often hear these stories behind the scenes of if a player is dismissed from the program, they demand that he turns in his playbook, right? Like, yep. I mean, that's not uncommon. I don't know that it happens 100% of the time, but this is why that happens. But, hey, look, if you've got a digitized form of that, it doesn't matter because it's on your Google Drive or you've got it on a PDF on your laptop or whatever in this day and age. Like, crazy stuff, though, because it probably – I mean, it almost certainly had an impact on that game, right? Because, I mean, UTSA played Memphis, I mean, a whole lot better than they really should have. And, yeah, I mean, there's no way. There's no way that having access to that information didn't impact the way things played out.
Well, that's not what UTSA says. Jeff Traylor says it had no – real bearing on the outcome of the game, and so did Owen McCown. Now, Owen McCown, we played the sound earlier. Connor, how many times did he end up saying that it played no? He said it three times within a 45-second period. So I think that before that, the SID and Jeff Traylor and Owen McCown all got together to sort of plan their answer to that question.
What, if it's going to have no impact, then why are you seeking it out?
And yeah, then, well, and they didn't. Okay, they didn't quite seek it out exactly. I mean, it was sent to them. To be fair, it was sent to them, put right in their lap. But you know, like to act like you didn't take it into consideration. To listen, I don't want to throw around crazy accusations, but to act like Owen McCown wouldn't bring this to Jeff Traylor directly, and Jeff Traylor says he had no knowledge of it. It's just I don't believe you. Unfortunately, I just don't.
Yeah, well, I mean,
because if I was in their shoes, I would use it. I would bring it to my head coach. I would do everything I can to try to get something out of it. You try to get an edge on everybody, and if something lands in your lap, you use it.
Yeah, but I get why they're publicly denying it, because it would look bad if they just completely fessed up to, yeah, we stole their playbook, you know, whatever. Like, nobody's going to confess to that, but at the same time, nobody's going to turn down that information if it becomes available to them. My question is, like, how did this negotiation go between the ex-Memphis DB and the UTSA quarterback? You know, like, what exactly did that look like?
Listen, I think I have the DM exchange here. There was not much in the way of a negotiation. This is what we have. This is Taj Rael sending to Owen McCown on DM. On Instagram. Here you go. That's all the signals. And there was like three pictures before that. Owen McCown responded with crying emojis. And then Taj Rael said, far leftist coverages. I'll send you the better list showing you the call. But they run quarters and none of them safeties can cover, by the way. No reroutes on the slot. The field safety is the weakest link in the defense. His hamstring hurting, but he running out of eligibility. So when you play him, he's number zero.
Right.
And then Owen McCown said, bet, let me know if they cut your stuff off and I'll put in a word. I guess maybe he was saying, you know, if Memphis completely cuts ties with you, I'll try to get you here to UTSA. Because I guess they were JV teammates in high school. But no, there was not much negotiation, David. It was Taj Rael going out of his way to go after the University of Memphis and try to make them lose the ball.
Well, that's what I was unsure of, is what their relationship was. Did they know each other previously, or did he just out of the blue find this guy online and say, hey, here's our playbook if you're interested? Honestly, like, the fact that they had a prior relationship makes it make a little more sense. I mean, I'm not justifying this. Like, this is obviously a very unfortunate situation that this ever transpired for Memphis. But, I mean, that at least adds some context to it, the fact that they knew each other growing up.
Yeah, for sure. Now, American Conference Media Day was today, and Tim Pernetti, he had a 7:30 a.m. address. Shout out to everybody who got up to go see that and got the coffee in him. But he brought up an interesting idea when it comes to TV revenue. He wants to basically consolidate it. And the idea of consolidation is you get rid of this fragmented conference-by-conference TV deal, and everybody comes together and say you go with ESPN and Fox. You have just this massive TV deal in a bigger pie, Now, you'd still divvy it up based on views and who's watching it. But how do you feel about that idea? Because my sense is, even if you consolidate the TV revenue and everybody's operating and taking money out of the same pie, I still don't think that would work out for the American very well.
No, because if you do that, then you're going to start slicing off pieces of the pie and saying, you know what, we don't want the American, the lower tier, at least, of the American, getting a piece of this pie at all. Like, right. We're just going to pack it. This is the Super League. This is the...
Hey, it's Morgan Abscher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Break off. Well, that's what he's suggesting, is our top... You know, he's going to say everybody for now, but then they're going to get to the table and decide, you know what, these bottom 40 schools in FBS bring nothing. Maybe it's the bottom 60 or 80, you know, wherever they draw that line. I mean, because do you really want, you know, 80 teams from the Conference USA, AAC, Sun Belt kind of ranks diluting like what your deal is worth? I don't think you do. So I get why he's saying this. Like, and it makes sense because this is what the NFL does, right?
Yes.
Like, you don't have the AFC South doesn't have its own TV deal.
Sure.
But... And then you split up the playoffs among the networks, and, you know, like, I get it. You're wanting to move more to that model. But I don't think it's very collegial, if you know yeah. what I'm saying.
Because, well, it just doesn't make sense. With the NFL, you can do it. There's 32 teams, one entity. And in college football, there's 134 teams and, let's see, 10 entities? From a conference perspective in FBS, it doesn't seem like there would be any clean way to do that, to consolidate.
Well, not to mention, like, everybody's media rights deal expires at a different time. That's one of the harder parts of the whole situation, is just figuring out how to get this all, like, on the same timeline. I mean, because everybody's media rights package, I mean, I realize, like, there's a handful of these that are going to be up after 2030 or whatever, but still, I mean, you when you start talking about the lower tier Division One and there's just so many different timelines that you have to line up, and that's a big hurdle here. But I think what he's laying the groundwork for is for the Big Ten and the SEC and maybe the Big 12 and the ACC to all pool their rights together, but primarily the Big Ten and the SEC to pool their rights together so that they're no longer competitors, but sort of like teammates. Because right now, I mean, there's really, outside of the fact that the Big Ten and the SEC are the two top dogs at the table in the college football playoff, you know, there's really nothing else that they are in concert on. But if you get them under the same media rights umbrella, oh my gosh, then the breakaway really starts to take shape. And, you know, I think that's kind of what we're headed towards in the relatively near future.
Yeah. Now, speaking of a breakaway, the North Carolina, they're trying to break away from the ACC. Not surprising. But, like, what was your response to that? Like, besides sort of, okay, we figured that the ACC is in sort of troubled waters here. This wouldn't happen, though, till 2030 or 2031 when the exit fee goes down to about $75 million.
Yeah, I was on the air with Jeffrey when this came out, and I was pretty surprised by it because it got out. Not surprised that North Carolina is looking to make the move to the SEC. I mean, that's the least shocking thing ever. That North Carolina is trying to go to the SEC, but I was surprised that, like, it got out in such a public way so far in advance. And I mean, it's not the least bit surprising, but at the same time, like, what Jeffrey kind of surmised, and I think I agree with him, is North Carolina trying to jump the line, right? Because, like, we know the ACC is going to fall apart in 4 or 5 years, almost certainly. And when it falls apart, where are the leftover teams going to go? Right? Like, you would prefer to go to the Big Ten or the SEC. And if you're North Carolina, you know, I mean, you'd probably prefer to go to the SEC because of where you're located. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? But I think to localize that whole situation,
right?
Like, it kind of gives Memphis an idea of, like, what the future could look like.
It gives you a timeline for when you could maybe try to wiggle your way back into one of those conferences.
Exactly. And that's it. So I think, you know, I think there's a much better than zero chance that the ultimate destination here for Memphis is among the leftover parts of the ACC.
Oh, that's kind of, you know.
Hey, it's better than being in the American.
Yes. Okay, what's better? Okay, can I ask you this straight up? And I guess it's still the ACC if they got in there in 2030 or 2031 and, you know, played out the rest of the it's 2036 is when their grant of rights is over. So they'd get maybe some money, unless they offered the $200 million and no TV revenue deal that they offered the Big 12. But what's better, like, in your opinion, maybe from a competition standpoint, ACC or Pac-12 in football and Big East in basketball and all the other
sports? Yeah, I don't know. I kind of tend to think the ACC thing makes more sense. But it depends which of the leftover parts are still there, right? Like, is it literally Boston College, Wake Forest, and let's say Virginia Tech? Yeah, right. Like, is that it? Or from a back, because, you know, there could be good leftover basketball programs. Like, if Duke is still there, if Wake Forest is still there, if Syracuse is still there. I mean, that's a good basketball history, especially if Louisville stays behind. You know, I mean, geographically speaking, like, Louisville and Georgia Tech would be way more sensible than the Pac-12. So I actually kind of like the ACC idea. But I realize you're going to have to be patient for that with no guarantee that it's actually going to come to fruition. Whereas you could put some work together now to get yourself into the Big East for basketball and the Pac-12 for football. And it just feels like there's this sense of immediacy with this for Memphis that, you don't want to wait till 2030, because then what if you get passed over then? Like, maybe we can make this Pac-12 Big East thing happen now, fresh on the off the heels of this, disappointing Big 12 situation. Like, I understand, why people are interested in that. But what I don't want to see is Memphis lock itself into, a hefty exit fee. Because they're going to have to pay $25 million to get out of the AAC right now. Well, then if you go to the Big East or the Pac-12, you sign up for another exit fee. And then something attractive comes along in 2030 and you can't do it because you used all your liquid to exit the American. Like, that to me would be a bad scenario.
No doubt. Well, David, I appreciate it. Get back to moving, will you? Appreciate it.
All right, man. Will do. Hey, thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. He is David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball writer and college football writer for CBS Sports. Now, it is a Friday, so I know what you need to do. You need to get by a liquor store. And when you go by the liquor store, I know you've been buying that national brand for years, but you need to break that habit because we have a distillery in town that does it better. Whatever spirit you want, they do it better. Old Dominic Distillery. They have gin, vodka, toddy, whiskey, and bourbon. They have award-winning selections of that whiskey and bourbon, and they have multiple selections, so find the bottle of your choice. They also have just released their new premium vodka using Memphis Aquaphor water. Charcoal distilling and the distillation process makes it very, very good. But it's a premium vodka. Get your hands on a bottle today. It is brand new. But a spirit from Old Dominic is the most fresh, most full spirit you can buy in this city because the distillery is right here in town. 305 South Front Street is where you can find them. They have events all the time. You can check out all the events at olddominic.com, but I'll let you know coming up tomorrow from 6 to 9 p.m., they will have live music right there at the bar. So make sure that you show up, get a craft cocktail, tell them Gabe sent you. You can also ship Old Dominic spirits anywhere in the United States of America. Get them as a gift. Just go to olddominic.com to do that. Book a tour and tasting. Stop by if you're just having a night out on the town. Stop by the bar and get a drink. It's a great time always at Old Dominic. Old Dominic Distillery. Come say hi. Now we need to go ahead and get to small talk. And we have some news, or at least a quote, regarding the Players Association, a former Players Association head, and the CBA in the NBA. We'll explain it when we return right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, at this point, I think everybody understands that the new CBA in the NBA is absolutely insane, right? When you draft well, when you pay players a lot of money and they perform, it just becomes harder and harder to afford. The luxury tax aprons are crazy. You get into the second apron, they could freeze draft picks. You could have a repeater tax. The Celtics, with the moves they made this offseason, saved nearly $199 million worth of a luxury tax bill. That's how restrictive and crazy it can get. The Celtics have lost 9 of their 15 players off their championship roster. The Oklahoma City Thunder just get into their prime window with homegrown talent. They win a championship, and now they have to start having money conversations. The Cleveland Cavaliers, we can go on and on. The CBA is brutal. And we have a lot of players that have spoken up on how restrictive it is and not liking it. We have another one, C.J. McCollum. He was on Old Man in the Three. I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, couldn't have said it any better. You should not be punished for drafting your homegrown talent, developing it into championship-level talent. You just shouldn't be punished that way. You shouldn't be punished for being a good team. That's ultimately what this CBA does. Connor, do you know who the NBA Players Association president was in 2021 when the CBA was ratified and signed?
I do.
Who was it?
It was C.J. McCollum.
So, the most influential player in the Players Association, who ultimately could have put the kibosh on the CBA, is now complaining about it. I don't know if that makes sense, C.J. Listen, I like your message. And we always talk about, liking the message, not the messenger. I think this fits that criteria. CJ, you had the most influential voice. You could have stopped it. You could have warned the other players not to sign and not to agree to this. But you didn't. Right? Like, if you're, I always say this, like, if you're talking about a presidential election and you don't vote, I don't know if you have the right to complain on the back end if you don't get your vote out there and you get it heard. It could be a local election as well. I don't think if you did nothing to stop this and you had the most influential say in the matter, you could have told people and told players not to go with this. I don't think you have the right to complain about it on the back end. I just don't. I agree with his message, but him saying it, brother, you screwed this up. It's not all your fault, but it's more fault should be placed on you than the normal Players Association rep or any other player in the NBA.
I think to agree to the CBA, CJ McCollum and the players and the lawyers that were involved working for the union probably allowed this to go into place without realizing how much of a detriment it may be in the future to team building, and maybe not realizing that it would accidentally penalize teams for drafting well.
For being good.
If I had to guess at the time, they just had no idea how big of a factor it would actually be. I don't think that CJ deserves all of the blame for it. There were a lot of people involved, a lot of lawyers involved, a lot more players were involved.
Yeah.
But it is funny to hear the guy who was the president of the players' union at the time say, man, that CBA is really holding some teams back, when you could have negotiated a bit further. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt in that they probably didn't realize how big of an issue it would actually be.
I get what you're saying, and I'm not going to completely nullify it, but I'm going to say I don't know if I accept that personally as an excuse. You're the president of the NBA Players Association.
He's not a lawyer,
I know that there's...
Hey, it's Morgan Absher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Lawyers that you're listening to, and if they don't tell you certain information, you don't have that information, you're not privy to that information. But being that you're the president of the NBA Players Association, you have to be very well educated on what this could mean long term. And he clearly was not. And that's not just him. That's the player reps. That's Jaren Jackson Jr., for God's sake. That's a bunch of people that could have had a say in this that didn't have a say in this. But in the end of the day, if you're in that position of influence, you have to be as educated as possible on the ramifications of the CBA that you're ultimately going to sign and ratify. And I don't think he had all the information he needed.
I don't agree with that at all. I don't think that he didn't have all the information. I think that they didn't realize how big of a factor it would be. I also don't think that they realized that the owners would cut costs in the way that they were. You can't predict that. I think that he deserves some blame. I'm just not going to place
blame, of course.
I'm just not going to place it all at the feet of him. And I'm also just not going to sit here and I don't think it's fair for us to say he didn't have all of the information, because we also need to remember the players agreed to this. It wasn't CJ McCollum by himself,
right,
unilaterally saying we have agreed to this. The players
big
voted on this
influence,
and agreed
though.
To it. I guess so, but they have a
player. He's the president of the Players Association.
He does. He can't override the players.
I know he can't override it. He can definitely tell them what this is going to do, how you should vote, and ultimately.
And they voted on it.
Right, well, I don't remember any much pushback at that time.
I don't think they realized how big of a deal it would be. I don't think they realized that the owners
now
are going to cost cuts.
Now they do.
Cost,
next CBA needs to look different.
Like they did. Yeah. The next one will look different. But I also don't think that you can predict that the Boston Celtics would win a championship, change ownership, and then send everybody
they
out.
Only have
like, they
six
can't
players
that.
Left 2 years later.
Yeah,
that
he deserves some blame. I think that it's overblown by saying he didn't have information when the entire player union voted on this and it went into place.
Yeah. Now, hour number three is on the way. Last hour of the week right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show. Make sure you stick around for that. On the other side, we bring on Braden Fehoko, former NFL defensive tackle. He just got a new deal with DraftKings to talk some NFL. So we'll talk some NFL on the other side right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hey, it's Morgan Absher.
And I'm Kaylin Moore.
And we're the hosts of the Crime House original podcast, Clues.
Every Wednesday, we sneak past the crime scene tape and open a new case file for some of the most gripping true crime cases.
Follow and listen to Clues, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.